asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing quiet quitting, cheap ribeyes, and another housing recession.
Yeah, that's the big question, right? Is this going to be, are we living in another housing bubble? We're talking about that today, along with a bunch of other stories. This is our Friday Flight, man, where we tackle some of the different headlines that we think are the most important, the headlines we think you need to pay attention to this week. But real quick, did you see that it's like, what is it, National Cinema Day this weekend?
Yeah, we're not talking about the senator from Arizona. This is not National Christian Cinema
Day. No, this is, so September 3rd, all movie theaters. They're only going to be $3. I'm sure a lot of folks have maybe even already seen that, but if not, know that you can get in to go see a movie at prices you hadn't seen since like 1988.
That's right. Yeah. And even so, $3 to go see a movie, and the big movie chains are participating too. So Regal and AMC.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
And regardless of the format as well, which I didn't dive into.
You can go see an IMAX, which is typically $18, or I don't even know what it costs anymore. Because
when's the last time you've gone to see a movie?
I think I went once during the pandemic, took the kids to see a Disney movie, but
you like rented the whole place out to yourself, right?
Basically, there was no one else there. So, but I haven't been to a movie since, and honestly, I probably won't go this weekend.
Well,
got a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah.
But well, even if I didn't, I don't know. I might be up for a $3 movie. That sounds like fun.
Like that's what it would take to get me out into an actual movie theater to see something out of the comfort of my own home. You and I, we were talking about this morning. Ross Douthat, one of our, he's a great writer over at the Times, and he was talking about how we're in the age of blockbuster TV, right? Where you're seeing the different platforms spending millions of dollars on their programming, and essentially
hundreds of millions.
I mean, well, yeah, Lord of the Rings is it something like 700,
which releases
700 million?
I think tonight, basically, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out,
yeah.
And
but it makes sense because there's so much great programming at our fingertips on our big screens, and the convenience that offers when you're in the stage of life that we're in, man. We are Kate and I. We're going to be more way more prone to watch a movie sitting at home than actually, you know, after we put the kids down rather than going out.
Well, it's typically just a really expensive endeavor to go see a movie, especially if you're a family. Like, if even as an individual, though, thinking about spending $15 or more to go see a movie, it's like, it's prohibitively expensive.
And that's assuming you're not going to get popcorn and a drink.
Assuming you're shuffling in your own snacks, right? But, and which, I don't know if that's frugal or cheap. We can cover that at a later date. But that's, for when, especially when talking about buying four or five or six tickets, as would be the case for your family.
Too many tickets.
You got to wait for National Cinema Day every year, and that might be the only day it even crosses your mind to go see a movie.
It's like, all right, kids, once a year, we go to the theater.
Exactly.
Yeah, the idea of going to the movie theater, though, with a two-year-old, almost three-year-old now that you and I both have, that does not sound fun for anyone.
Yeah. No, not worth it, no matter if it's free even, right? So, all right, let's move on, Matt. Let's get to all the stories we found interesting this week. We will put a link, by the way, in our show notes to National Cinema Day so you can see all the details. But the first story we want to cover is actually about electric vehicles because, the price of electric vehicles is rising faster than, I don't know, gas prices were rising just a few months ago, Matt. You know,
it's rising at a rapid clip.
Yeah,
they've been for a minute
going down, I think, for almost 3 months straight, which is good news for everyone, but electric vehicles are literally going up in price five times faster than their, and I know you're trying to get this term adopted, their ICE counterparts, their internal combustion engine counterparts.
I'm not going to try to make that stick because it doesn't make sense. Like, the abbreviation makes sense, but it just does not seem to fit
when you say it out loud.
Gasoline-powered vehicles is what I will continue to say.
Okay, all right. Well, this was according to IC Cars, who does just a lot of surveys like this, and part of that is because of a lack of inventory, but rising battery costs are another piece of the puzzle of why electric vehicles are costing so much these days. And manufacturers, they seem to be focusing on the luxury and truck markets too. So the EV makers know that there's more profit to be made if they make a fancier version of an electric vehicle. That's why we're seeing cars like the Nissan Leaf basically die, right? Nissan has said, we're not manufacturing this car anymore. And you and I, we really like electric vehicles. We truly do think they're the future, but a massive chunk of these vehicles becoming unaffordable for the average person doesn't really bode well for EV adoption. And California just passed a law, too, that bans the sale of gas cars by the year 2035. That is not too far in the future. And I think, you know, we could see electric vehicle prices rise even more because of this. And again, EVs are probably the future. We like them a whole lot. But there are some physical and financial constraints that are probably going to prevent us from becoming a nation of EV drivers in the near future. We're just not going to see adoption continue at the rate that we've been seeing it if prices continue to do what they're doing.
Yeah, and with the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, we saw gas prices increase dramatically, right? Like, this is back in March. And right about that same time, too, we see the price of electric vehicles skyrocket. And so the reason I mention that is because I think it's important to keep in mind like the whole picture, the entire picture of what's going on. And even though folks are looking at gas prices and they're thinking, ooh, like, I don't know if I want to pay that anymore, it's also important to take into account the total cost of what it's going to take to get you somewhere. Mm-hmm. You got to take into account the cost of that electric vehicle. But Joel, you mentioned how the price of gasoline has been dropping over the past 80 days or so. That's the good news, but there's a little bit of bad news that we need to mention as well. And that is that heating costs are likely going to be increasing this winter as natural gas prices, they've been soaring in recent weeks and really over the past year. It's not going to be as bad as what's been happening in Europe, where utility bills have more than doubled in the past year.
Oh, man. It's to see the stories about what's happening with consumers.
It's insane.
Great Britain and stuff like that, or in Germany.
Yep.
It's not a good place to be right now.
Yeah, they're in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
But even still, here in the U.S., I think it's important to start preparing, start budgeting now, start preparing to spend more money, more of your income for utilities this winter. And if you are in a state where you can shop your rates, which you can do in something like 20 states around the country, be sure to do so. But then even still, the question remains, do I lock in with a fixed rate and hopefully secure maybe a lower price per therm, thinking that rates are going to be going up? Or do you kind of gamble a little bit, pay the variable rate, which tends to be higher, thinking that, okay, surely rates are going to come down. Who knows what the future is going to hold? Personally, I think prices are going to continue to go up because I think things are going to, they might look pretty crazy this winter regarding the energy costs, not only that Europe is experiencing, but then how that's going to impact the U.S. as well.
I typically like to take the bird in the hand on that when it comes to natural gas rates, and I like to lock in the rate. And the reality is that a lot of other competitors in the space, they'll often pay for your break fee. If they're offering a better deal and they really, really want your business, they'll pay for you to break your contract with your current provider. Mm-hmm. So I would say that those offers are, at least here where we live, but in a lot of other states too, those offers are good enough from other competitors that you can lock in, securing yourself a better rate than you would be sticking to some sort of variable rate plan and then hoping that you're going to get a good offer from somebody else in the future too.
Yep.
But yeah, buckle up and prepare your budgets accordingly and use, I don't know, space heaters maybe instead of heating the whole house. Like there's all sorts of ways.
Invest in a pair of long johns.
Yes.
Like go to your local Walmart or Amazon, whatever, and your local Goodwill. But I think more people should be considering locking down those base layers in order to stay warm in the winter.
Agreed.
We'll be talking more about that, I'm sure, this winter. Because we've never, so, you know, we're in our new space here and we have no idea what the heating bill might be. And so at the old place, it was fairly easy to keep it kind of warm and toasty down there. But in this older carriage house, the jury is still out.
Yeah, kind of leaks like a sieve, I think, based on everything I can tell. And while we're talking about transportation, let's talk about bikes for a second, because, I don't know, that's what we do. And I was listening to an interview recently from a guy who wrote kind of a book about the history of bikes. It was fascinating, and it really is. It's one of the best inventions ever made. It's really transformed the way we can get around as people, and I feel like the pandemic actually shone a spotlight on bikes in a really beautiful way. We saw bike sales ticking up. I saw more people out on two wheels, and I thought that was awesome. And then recently we talked about the massive rise in the popularity of e-bikes. Well, sadly, e-bikes were not carved out in the recent Inflation Reduction Act bill. We talked about the electric car rebates that were included, but e-bikes didn't get any love, and that we don't like seeing because we think they're a game changer when it comes to getting around town and being good for the environment. But Axios actually just wrote a story about e-bike benefits that a whole lot of states, cities, and companies are offering.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just didn't realize that the benefits were that numerous around the country from different, like I think Denver is one of the places where you can buy an e-bike and you can get some sort of tax credit from the city. And so we'll link to, actually, there's a Google Doc that tracks incentives around the country and in Canada. And so we'll link to that in the show notes. But basically, if you've been considering one and you're bummed that the federal government didn't include any sort of rebate for that e-bike purchase, that they haven't done anything about that yet, but maybe you've balked at the price. You're like, they're really expensive. And they are. But we think that if you use them enough, they're going to pay for themselves because you're going to be in your car less. You might find that there's some financial assistance out there, which is great. So again, we'll link to that in the show notes. And hopefully there's something where you live that will reduce the price of that e-bike that maybe you've been wanting to buy.
That's right. All right, let's talk about whether or not we are in a housing recession. That's a phrase that's being tossed around quite a bit right now. The definition is even harder to agree on than the one for an economic recession, it seems like. But it is true that home sales, they are slowing. We're also seeing that inventory is increasing as more folks are listing their homes for sale. And we are also seeing more price cuts. For the first time in quite a while, U.S. home values fell month over month. And granted, it was only like a minuscule amount. It's like 0.1%, something like basically just flatline.
I don't think a 0.1% drop makes a housing recession.
Does that sound like a bubble popping?
Right.
It doesn't to us. You know, this doesn't sound like a housing recession. But the reality is that those are all good things. All of these changes that we've seen recently. And that's because the housing market, like much of the rest of the economy, was booming in an unsustainable way over the past couple of years. The typical home, it is still worth something like 45% more than it was in 2019.
Wow.
Which is a massive increase, more than what we've typically seen. And so the natural question is...
much more than the typical, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so folks are like, oh no, the sky's falling just because it's kind of flatlined for a little bit. And it's like, no. Take another step back. Look at the big picture. Do you realize how much equity you have in your home that you've realized over the past couple of years? But the natural sort of next question is, will home prices continue to fall? That's a great question, because they certainly could, but we feel it's unlikely that we're in store for any sort of meaningful housing crash, given the fundamentals, given for the increased demand that we're seeing for housing, that coupled with the much smaller supply of housing that we've created here in the U.S. over the past decade. We think that means that prices will continue to rise, maybe just not at the clip that we've seen recently.
Well, that's an interesting point, Matt. I mean, I think I could see that happening, but I could see certainly not a housing recession, but I could see housing prices continue to decline further moving forward into the coming months. And I think a lot of that, so much of that is tied to what happens with rates. And we've seen rates, even just this week, bouncing back up, hitting basically right at 6%. And if we see rates on mortgages continue to climb, that's going to curb affordability even more. And so I think we could see prices have to go down.
That's true.
Because of that. So
yeah, there might be some small declines. It's not going to be a pop, right?
No.
Like nothing is going to crash.
The recession term is for the housing market.
It's a bit extreme.
It's extreme. And we don't necessarily see anything close to that happening in the near future, but that remains to be seen. And there are people on YouTube making videos about this because they want the clicks and they want to incite fear, I think, and panic into people. And for some people who have wanted to buy a home and they haven't been able to afford one yet, Matt, they're kind of hoping for this too, right? They're hoping for some sort of housing market calamity so they can buy a home at a cheaper price. And I totally understand that, but the reality is that's unlikely to happen. And we just released episode 551 about buying a home in this crazy expensive market. You might be wondering, am I nuts to still be making offers? We don't think so, because as long as your personal finances are in good shape and you're planning to own that home for a decent chunk of time, we would say at least 7 years, preferably a decade, we're totally fine with you going in that direction, even though there's quite a bit of uncertainty about where the housing market is headed in the short term, because housing prices, they might continue to decline for a little while. They might continue to creep up. It's very hard to predict what's going to happen in the short term. There are just so many factors at play. But for you, if you're financially prepared to buy a home, I wouldn't let these doom and gloom predictions of a housing recession prevent you from trying to buy a house if you're in the position to do that.
That's right. Speaking of houses, The Atlantic just published an article about the HGTV-ification of America. Clearly, there's more streaming home renovation content out there that's available to us now more than ever before. That's because a huge percentage of your friends, your neighbors, your family are likely watching it. And while it might be entertaining, it's also changing our consumption patterns. It's kind of subconsciously making us want to embrace like some of these specific trends for the homes that we live in. It's making some of the things that are currently in our home seem more disposable than maybe they should be. So, for instance, like the more white appliances that get ripped out of a kitchen on TV, well, the more difficult it's going to be for us to continue to stare at our own white appliances that work perfectly fine.
Oh, man, if they didn't look good, if the designers on whatever show I'm watching thought that they had to be ripped out, well, then clearly mine are long in the tooth and they need to be replaced also.
Personally, I think white appliances look pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But this is just another form of comparison. You know, like we're becoming less okay with the things in our life that are still working perfectly fine. And, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean that we think that HGTV or these home renovation shows or, you know, Flip It or Flop or whatever, that they should be banned.
There's so many names. Design on a Dime, Flip It or Flop. I don't know. Like Property Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
My mom could probably
buy my house.
Them all.
Yeah. She's got the roster. She's got the lineup. But I want to share this because I think that the opportunity still lies with us to control what entertainment we're consuming. There are multiple points where we have the opportunity to just not watch the stupid show. Or if you want to watch the show, you still have the opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to watch that as entertainment, but I'm not going to allow that to affect how I feel about my own residence. Or even if I do feel like my own home feels, like you said, like long in the tooth, if it's feeling kind of outdated, you still have control over your behavior as to whether or not you rip those appliances out and purchase new stuff. So I just want to emphasize personal responsibility and the ability that we have over our own decisions and how that's going to affect our money. Just this past Wednesday, we talked about the different marketing maneuvers out there that stymie our growth, right? The things that keep us from achieving the goals that we want to achieve. And nowhere within that episode did we say that, well, marketing should not exist. Yeah. No, that can exist.
Burn every billboard down to the ground. Although it would make our interstates, I don't know, feel a little more pleasant.
That is true. But it is up to us in the end to decide of what it is we're going to consume, how we feel about those things, and then ultimately what we spend our money and our resources on.
I completely agree. And if you start to feel like maybe the things that you're taking in media-wise are pushing you to consume more, we've talked about that, like social media, people around us, like keeping up with the Joneses, it's a real thing that all of us feel, even Matt and I feel, right? The temptation at times.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, but what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and if you can cull some of those things out of your media consumption habits, it might help you avoid some of those downer feelings you might get about the place where you live. And you might be like, wait a second, I like my house. I just started to think for a second because I'm watching all this stuff that I needed to upgrade this or that, or I needed to rip everything down and to the studs and start over when your house might be perfectly good. And so I guess, sometimes we just let those outside influences have too much power over us.
Totally. But, absolutely.
All right, Matt, we got more to get to on this Friday flight, including some good news on price drops at the grocery store. We haven't been able to say much of that lately.
No, that's true.
Yeah, we'll talk about that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial. Oh, All right, we're back for the break, and we will talk about that affordable red meat, specifically ribeye. It's a lot cheaper these
brisket
days.
Too. We'll get there.
Yeah, but let's share the ludicrous headline of the week. This one's from the New York Times, and this one reads, "The Rise of the Productivity Score." And dude, to be honest, this article was kind of tough to read. The Times, they detail how more employees across the economy are being tracked, they're being recorded and ranked. And those tracking systems, for some folks, are even docking your paycheck if you are not being productive enough, if you're not meeting your quotas, if your screen falls asleep for maybe more times than is allowed. This certainly feels like something out of a dystopian novel or film. It sounds like, I mean, honestly, downright depressing to have your efforts reduced down to just a simple numerical score. No wonder quiet quitting is becoming a trend. You know, like, I don't mean to say that this is a good trend necessarily. Like, I don't think two wrongs ever make a right. And I'm all about working hard, you know, like doing the best that we can for any employer out there. But dude, the more employers are trying to track us and turn us into widgets, I think the more that trust is going to deteriorate. And without trust, it's going to be difficult to maintain and even establish a successful business,
yeah.
Right?
And that, like, quiet quitting, by the way, it's basically in reference to people doing the bare minimum to get by. It's
right,
like,
right.
I kind of, in essence, quit. I still want the paycheck, but I'm just going to kind of mail it in. Like, I'm not going to put a lot of effort behind the tasks that you've assigned me. And I get it. If your employer is treating you like this, then I understand that reaction. But we would also say there's a better way forward, and you should probably just leave an employer who treats you like this. And I think, like, part of this is the quick switch to work from home, Matt, that employers maybe feel the need to keep tabs on their employees a little bit more. It sounded nice in the beginning for employees to be working remote, and they can kind of shift their hours a little bit more to be productive at different times of day, but not every employer is down with that. And apparently some people are installing, like, software that causes their mouse to jiggle because it's mouse jigglers, which I think is a great term, but to make it look like they're doing work even when they've stepped away from their computer. But they feel the need to do that because their employer is tracking them every single minute of the day. And the reality is, I think that employers, they should be hiring folks that they trust to do the job they've hired the person to do. And that means tracking based on results that can be measured, not time spent working, not clicks of the mouse. They're not just looking for, it just reminds me of in school doing busy work, right? It was like, that's not what we're looking for, and that's not what employers should be looking for. Being big brother every minute of the workday, it's going to lead to worse outcomes overall.
Yeah, and it's not that they're not measuring results. They're just measuring the wrong things.
The wrong things.
Right? Like with this, I mean, we've seen a massive increase in the ability for folks to work from home, and different technology companies are out there trying to figure out how it is that they can measure the productivity of their employees. So, like, I get what's going on here, but I think what this means is, I mean, like we're talking about turning employees into widgets, and instead of looking at employees as widgets, like, I mean, managers need to do a better job proactively managing their employees, and whether that's the relationship they have with them or working with them to sort of establish whatever goals there are.
Offer more carrots instead of sticks.
Yeah,
you know,
dude, absolutely.
Instead of saying, like, I'm going to penalize you if your mouse isn't moving for, you know, every single minute of every single day, you could offer more incentives and be more motivational instead of just being ready to punish.
Exactly.
the first instinct when the mouse isn't moving.
Yeah, it's a solution provided by software that truly does turn us into widgets. Yeah. And widgets are fine, you know, when you're creating a machine, like a cold, lifeless machine, but that's not who people are, you know, like, that's not what a company is. And the other thing too, if you start treating people like widgets, like cogs and gears in this machine, and the idea is that you're able to then swap those people out very easily, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, folks are going to do that themselves. Like, they're going to be more likely to leave the company because they're seeing that they're not valued, because they're realizing that, well, what's the point of staying here when I can just hop over here? All things being equal, I would rather get paid a little bit more. And maybe, in fact, I will be treated a little bit better over there as well.
Yeah, and I think some of the headlines make it sound like there's just this general reticence to work, that maybe people don't like to work as much as they used to. And I don't really actually think that's true, that young people are maybe allergic to working 9 to 5 or something like that.
Right.
I think that's a wrong take. I think they just hate their specific job, or maybe they don't like their employer the way their employer is treating them.
Or they might think that they don't like to work. Like, right? Like on the surface level, they're thinking, yeah, I don't want to work. I want to spend my time doing other things. But if you take that view, I think you're discounting the intrinsic value that work can bring to your life. Because when you eliminate that from your life completely, you're eliminating purpose to a certain extent.
Eliminating income, which is a problem.
The solution there is can you give me money? Can that money be provided from another source without me having to work? But when you remove that purpose, I think you also remove like life satisfaction and happiness and just kind of all the different things that come with what feels like living a meaningful and productive life.
Yeah. So I think the remedy is to find a new job if your job sucks or if your employer is treating you like a widget. And good news, the job market's hot. You can land a bigger paycheck, better working conditions at the same time. So yeah, if you're kind of in that quiet quitting stage, like I'm just going to do the bare minimum and just kind of hold my nose at the stinky situation that is this job, then you should really start looking. You should start pounding the pavement and start applying for other jobs and look for companies that specifically are known to have a good company culture so that you don't end up in the same situation elsewhere. But Matt, let's move on. Let's talk about food for a second and how there's some good news at the grocery store, especially for carnivores, for meat eaters, because steak's getting cheaper, baby. And that's news to my ear. We're talking about year-over-year changes here. So almost every cut of steak, when you look at the numbers, actually costs less now than it did in September of 2021. Ribeye is 10% cheaper and brisket is 18% cheaper. I actually kind of know this anecdotally from talking to my cousin's husband when he smoked a brisket a couple weekends ago, and he was like, man, prices are so much better than they were a few months ago.
Meat's back on the menu, boys.
I think he said it was like $7 a pound, and now it's down to closer to $4. So
that's great.
That's a big discount. But yeah, for a minute those prices were just massively elevated, and our advice was consistently to you guys was to trade down, to instead of buying ribeye, get something cheaper and cook that for dinner, because ribeye at $7 a pound is so much different than ribeye at $14 a pound. And I'm a fan of eating steak every now and again. I don't do it all that often, but actually, Matt, I got some this week because I noticed the price was down when I was in the store, and then I saw this story and I was like, it's true.
It's totally true.
And
would you pick that up at Costco?
I did. Nice. And so maybe I'll start eating more steak again in the near future.
Well, on that note, The Washington Post, they actually had an article about how buying meat in bulk can save you even more money. And I'm not talking about a double pack of steaks at Costco. More folks are apparently buying more of their meat directly from the local farmers these days.
We're talking like half cows, whole cows.
Exactly.
That kind of buying.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a good thing monetarily on a lot of levels, not only for us as consumers, but also for the farmers. I've seen relatives actually get a whole or half cow that allows them to just curb their overall cost per pound in a significant way. Obviously, you got to have a deep freezer in order to store all of that meat.
Unless you just got a big appetite, buddy.
Even if you have a big appetite, you're not going to get that far. But what are your thoughts on this? Y'all have got do you have a fridge or a freezer in your garage?
A fridge.
Would you be willing to put in a deep freeze in order to get yourself? Say a half cow in order to save?
I think I would consider it, but we've never done it. But if let's say my older sister has done this before, and if she reached out to me, she's like, hey, would you guys want to split a half cow? It's going to cost $5 a pound, and that's cheaper than even the cheap cuts of beef or something like that, and you're going to get some of the good stuff too. I'd totally consider it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think some folks might be hesitant just because they're like, well, you got to buy a fridge or a freezer. You got to buy a deep freeze. Those things aren't cheap, but you can find them on sale. And the other thing, I feel like the other part of the equation is thinking through like electricity use. And it turns out deep freezes don't use all that much electricity. We calculated this because here where the studio is, our landlord, he's got his deep freeze plugged into our electricity down in the garage.
That's right.
And he just wanted to make sure that we were cool with that. He's just like, hey, guys, guys, just so you know, is that okay if we've got the deep freeze down there?
And we were like, as long as we can get some ribeye out of there every once in a while.
No, we did the math, and it was, I mean, I'm pretty sure it was less than $50. I think it was closer to $30 a year is what it would cost. And so think about how much money you'd be saving per pound on that beef, and certainly factor $30 a year into the equation. Factor in finding a deep freeze on sale or maybe, you know, on Facebook Marketplace. But I think it could definitely be a way of reducing that grocery bill in a major way, especially if you are a big fan of meat and steak.
Yeah. And I think one thing somebody who's listening, especially if they're vegan or they're really conscious about how much meat they consume, they might be wondering, what about the effects of eating meat on climate change, guys? And you're encouraging people to go eat like 3 steaks a day? Well, no, not necessarily. Well, the Atlantic, they actually published a really great article this week about how a world without animal agriculture, it's not necessarily more environmentally friendly than a fully vegan world would be.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. It was a really nuanced take. And basically, what they said, Matt, was that a world without meat would require a third more cropland. And large swaths of animal grazing land just aren't conducive to anything else. It's not like you could grow crops in some of those areas. And so we totally think that a lot of Americans could stand to eat less meat than they do now.
Sure.
That's certainly true, right? But eating less meat, especially the more expensive cuts, is going to curb your grocery bill in a meaningful way. So that's just a good thing to do if you want to save money. But if you consider the earth, you're worried about overall human flourishing in your eating decisions. I don't know. I thought that was an interesting article, and it shone some new light on, because I've always kind of been like, I've wondered that. I'm like, is it really that bad for the environment? There's people have different takes on that. And I thought that article in particular provided just a helpful, nuanced view of meat. We should eat less. Yes. And
most Americans probably should.
Yes. Yeah. And eating less is good for our bottom line too, typically.
Nice. Yeah. I didn't see that article, but I guess the big question I would bring up would be, what about all the cow farts? Because that's what you always hear about, all the cow farts and burps and the methane that they're producing.
I think that's something like 14% of the overall
emissions
that come from cows.
But
livestock.
We'll make sure to link to that. And you know, like, I feel like we're giving Costco a lot of love. We talked about buying steaks from them. You can also buy a deep freeze from them because those go on sale a couple times a year. Let's give some love to Sam's Club. Or actually, I guess we're kind of throwing shade their way because they're raising their membership price from $45 to $50 for like their regular membership, and then from $100 to $110 for its quote unquote plus level. And so this price hike is going to go into effect on October 17th. But Sam's Club, they will be giving members $5 in Sam's Club bucks, that's what I'll call them, for the first year of this increase. So that'll be nice, right? Kind of eases the pain a little bit, gets you used to the idea that the prices are going to be going up, giving you a full 12 months in advance notice. So we wanted to share that. We are more of Costco dudes here, but Sam's, it's a great warehouse option for a lot of folks, especially if that's the only option that you have in your area. Mm-hmm. And honestly, a $5 increase is probably not going to, you know, cause many members to peace out. But like, it is always going to be a good idea to reassess whether or not you're getting enough value out of that membership when your renewal date comes around. It's just like the subscriptions that we often have deducted from our account. We're so prone just to let those charges continue to rack up, and we're not really thinking hard about whether or not we are gaining any value from it, whether we're talking about Netflix or something that typically will save you money, something like a warehouse club. And so that's something to constantly reassess within your budget.
Yeah, now I'm on the edge of my seat to see if Costco's going to raise its membership price.
Yeah, they probably will.
Last time the CEO was interviewed, he was like, it's not on our radar, but it might be now. So we'll see what happens. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. We will, of course, put links to everything that we mentioned today on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. So we hope everyone has a fantastic holiday weekend. Labor Day is going to be on Monday. Don't forget. How could you forget if you've got the day off? I'm sure you're looking forward to that. But don't forget about us. Don't forget about How to Money. We've got a great Ask How to Money episode lined up for you where we're going to be taking listener questions. So you can look forward to that. Joel, that's going to be it for today, bud. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL Schedule Release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.